If you're expecting something huge and emotional and resonant from myself, Hugh and Spence, as we open up All About Symbian Insight number 182, you would be mistaken. We simply have me saying I'm Ewan Spence and then introducing the guests. You ready? Right then. Hi, I'm Ewan Spence. I have guests with me. One of them is called Rafe Blanford.
Hello, everybody.
One of them is called Steve Litchfield.
Hello there, and I'm just, excuse the noises, I'm just reviewing Turbo Grannies for later on this week and All About Symbian.
And one of them is the Lord Mayor of Hull, David Gilson.
Yes, hello, my loyal subjects. It is David Gilson.
Does Hull actually have a mayor, David?
Yes, it does.
Is he nice?
I couldn't possibly comment.
Oh, right, okay. Right, we'll move on rapidly from that. And yes, it's your All About Symbian Insight podcast. A little bit off-kilter, as always, as we take a look back at the week's news and reviews happening, not just in the Symbian world, but those in the smartphone world that impact on the state of Symbian as well. It has been an exciting week. I have been reviewing, David has been reviewing, Steve has been reviewing, and Rafe has been in Wales. Wait, Rafe, has smartphones reached Wales yet?
There are smartphones in Wales. I was actually surprised by the number I saw just walking along the cliff path with people taking images. So, yeah, I've been having a break for the last week in preparation for what I'm sure is going to be a very busy September, October and November.
Excellent. Is there anybody else in the country that I can upset in the first 3 minutes?
Probably not. I think you've sort of sorted out most people.
Excellent. Right, let's go for the Finns then. Rafe, I know you are connected, even though you might be popping at the site, keeping an eye on us and everything. But one of the interesting pieces of news that I spotted, which normally we would have left to you to write up on the site, which was the news of Vision Plus and Tero, unpronounceable surname, from Finland. Tell us a little bit more about that.
I think you're referring to Tero Ojanpera here, and I probably mispronounced names. Only Finns listening to this, I do apologise, and especially to Tero. With the Vision Plus connection you're talking about, what this is really is Tero Ojanpera has announced, or rather Nokia has announced, that he is leaving Nokia and then immediately announced that he's joining Vision Plus, which is a fund to foster application development for its ecosystem, and that's specifically towards the Windows Phone ecosystem, although it'll also be the Nokia ecosystem in general. It's being set up as an independently run investment fund, sort of focusing on innovative products. I mean, this is a typical press release speak. What that means is interesting things that are connected to the Nokia ecosystem that aren't necessarily within the purview of Nokia will be done by this. And there's actually quite a lot of this going on, and this is partly a result of some of the layoffs that Nokia made earlier in the year and are ongoing at the moment. You know, there's quite a lot of people who are exiting the company, maybe doing startups, looking for a bit of funding. And to a certain extent, you know, Nokia's involvement here is a part of that continuation, and actually connects quite well with what Tero was doing at Nokia, which is the Bridge program. And that Bridge program, again, is about matching people leaving Nokia with startups and also assisting with the setting up of new businesses. And one of the most interesting things about innovation in the mobile phone world is often a lot of it comes from very small companies, either small developers or even, you know, components within the phone itself. It's not just from the big research labs. So if you think about some of the advances coming in terms of sensors or maybe nanotechnology, a lot of that will actually come out of very small startup companies. And I think that's even more true for software, because clearly some of the costs to get started are perhaps a little bit lower there in terms of not needing a fully equipped lab. So there's going to be a continuation of that. But I think it's quite an important milestone to note this departure really from the Nokia leadership team. I've interviewed Tero Ojanpera a number of times, and he's been on the leadership team, I think, since 2005 or so. So, you know, 6 years at the top of Nokia, and I think he's had various positions from CTO to operations. And he's also been, to a large extent, responsible for a lot of the Ovi services. And let's just say that has a mixed track record. And in most recent times, he's sort of been responsible for trying to get Nokia into content, particularly a connection with Hollywood. I think he's probably most associated with some of the programs around that. Conspiracy for Good, the sort of augmented reality or sort of in-world gaming, was also associated with something he set up, and some of the Engage stuff as well. And I think the track record there hasn't been as stellar as it might have been, is probably the polite way to put it. And certainly he was a controversial figure at times within the company. You know, you speak to some people and they say, you know, he was a good boss to work for, that he had a lot of ideas, but sometimes the execution wasn't quite there. So I don't think there's any surprise that he's now departed from Nokia. I think this was pretty much inevitable when Stephen Elop came in. I'm actually surprised it's taken this long to come about. But clearly he was also representative of the Finnish leadership and associated with the old regime. So I think there's some probably politics at work here. And I'd suggest that there was a certain amount of, we need to find a role that is suitable for his talents that he's willing to take on. And this bridge program was reflective of that. And this new fund actually, you know, aligns very much with his interests around software and services. And so it'll be very interesting to see how this develops. But just, you know, to now reflect on where this leaves Nokia in terms of the leadership team, there has been a whole-scale change from Stephen Elop coming in, a leadership team that was really dominated by Finns. We've now got a very much more international leadership team. There's several Brits on the team. There's Americans. Obviously, Stephen Elop himself is a Canadian. And there are a few Finns left as well. But I think this reflects the changes that have taken place in Nokia. And I'm sure there'll be some people reminiscing about the good old days, but I think the international leadership team, the makeup of this, regardless of any strategy that's being carried out, is probably a good thing for the company because it gives a wider base of experience, and some of that's external, some of it has a much more international outlook. And I think one of the things we've learned about mobile, particularly in the last decade, is that it isn't uniform and you do need a real global outlook in order to be a really successful company. That isn't particularly associated with this one departure, but I suspect it may well be emblematic of that.
I have a question here, Rafe, and Nokia have already got some funds out there. I think the big one is, of course, Nokia Growth Partners is the one that everybody will probably remember. And we've seen Swipe still an active part of that. You've also got people like Quikr and Rocket Fuel, which some people might recognize as well. Kind, of course, used to be part of that fund and isn't anymore. So is this Nokia Growth Partners doing a sub-fund? Is this a separate fund? Is this, for want of a better word, Terrell's playground that's going on here? Where does this fit into what's already out there from Nokia in terms of venture capital?
Right, well, in terms of Nokia Ventures or Growth Partners, as you refer to that, they actually operate within the Nokia company. This is going to be separate to Nokia. And so there's a clear distinction there. In terms of Nokia's involvement in this, they're what's referred to as an anchor investor, which I suspect means they're going to be providing the vast majority of the money, but there may well be money coming in from the likes of Microsoft and potentially other interested parties. So I suspect it's set up from the beginning to allow injections of capital from others than Nokia, and that's obviously a distinction in terms of funding. As you say, there are a number of other funds out there that Nokia also gets involved with. I mean, it's a way that Nokia can fund things that isn't necessarily within the company, but it still has an interest in it, sort of strategic investment in many ways. I think with this Vision Plus fund, what we can expect to see, given some of the amounts involved and the people involved, there may be a focus on some smaller companies, particularly sort of early stage startups around software and ecosystem stuff for Windows Phone. And obviously with a fund, there's a certain play between, do you go for a wide scope and invest in everything, or do you focus and therefore can provide better expertise in a given area? So I think what we'll see with Vision Plus is something more focused around software and services, although that doesn't mean other things won't come in as well. It's hard to actually say because there's relatively limited information about as well, but my gut feel on this is, you know, the big things you need to look at is this is actually an independent company. It's not part of Nokia. And it's probably going to be looking at maybe some smaller scale investments, particularly around software and services.
Whatever. Terrell has a wonderfully huge address book and contacts, and so it will be interesting to see where that one goes. As always, you can leave your comments and thoughts on if any of the stories that we discuss on the podcast back at www.allaboutsymbian.com. You can also leave reviews back and find us in places like iTunes and various other podcast catalogues as well. And I mentioned iTunes there. Let's very briefly, because it has there's a little side story here, have a talk about the patent situation that happened over the weekend. IFA is a huge, great big tech conference that happens in Germany, and Samsung had their 7.7-inch tablets on display, and those tablets had to be removed after a court case from Apple for infringing IP and copyright patents and everything, because they looked a bit like their device. Now, we talked a lot about this in the last podcast, but what I saw this, and they were interesting. Then I also saw that the story popped up that Nokia's basically leased a bundle of their patents out to a company called Mossade. And Mossade will make money from about 2,000 of Nokia's patents, assuming that they can monetize them either through licensing or court cases or what. Like a third goes to Mossade and then the rest gets split between, like this, Nokia and Microsoft. And this is just going to be sort of general observation question to the three of you guys, which is, in the last couple of months, the whole patents in smartphones, certainly in the Android space, but it must be having an impact on all the design processes across the board. I mean, is this a good thing for the industry to suddenly be awash with everybody squelching anything that's even remotely copycat inside the handsets? For me, it's went a little bit too far and it's turned into a vendetta, but I'm interested to see what you guys think. Steve, you want to go first?
I'm absolutely with you. I think it's gone way too far and I think it's got utterly silly. I'm all for people holding their own intellectual property and enforcing that. But if you just look at the situation now where the Samsung Galaxy Tabs, is it 7.7, their sort of 7-inch tablet, is now being blocked in certain countries because of legal reasons. Their big IFA announcement, they had to actually put a tarpaulin over one of the 7.7 tablets announcement, I believe, and actually pull it during the show because of the legal threat. It's all getting rather silly. Apple doesn't even have a 7-inch tablet. They have the iPad, which is 10 inches. So we're now getting products which aren't even vaguely copies of the original products being slammed by the lawyers. And I think it's gone absolutely crazy.
David?
I think, this has gone too far. And I want to know what the threshold is for actually getting a patent, because I know you and we were joining in a conversation on Google Plus about this, and you said that Apple have a patent for what kinetic scrolling lists do when they get to the bottom, that little rubber banding effect, and there's a lot of things, even like pinch to zoom, for example. I can't really conceive that these are defensible patents. I mean, they all seem too trivial. And as for the Samsung Galaxy tablets looking too much like Apple devices, well, again, I don't think Apple are in a really defensible position because, A, there is prior art, aka 2001, etc., name any science fiction series you like, but also Apple design things in such a stripped-down way. But it's hard not to imitate these things. They are so generic. I mean, so how much work do you have to put in to make these things original? I mean, do you have to put the home button an inch to the left and it's okay?
And I should also mention that if say, let's just say, in a parallel universe, Apple computers or Apple PLC or Apple LLC or whatever they are, they were a struggling company. They'd invented this thing which hadn't really taken off. And they were struggling for cash, and they're rightly suing Samsung to high heaven, saying, you can't copy our design, you're making all the money. But this is the real world. This is 2011, and Apple are the biggest blinking company in the entire universe. They're making more money than Zeus, and I cannot see for the life of me why they need to go after other companies is smaller than they are when they're already making an absolute fortune.
We don't have to do that. David, I'll bring it to you because Apple did that 20-odd years ago and it was called the Newton.
Yeah, and they've also done it with the iPod. There's someone who invented the MP3 player first who they actually settled out of court with.
Rafe, there's lots of air going on, and obviously the American tech press is loving the Android versus Apple battle. But it's interesting that Nokia seemed to have insulated themselves with the deals that they did a couple of months ago. Is that right? Have Nokia, has Elop been ahead of the curve and basically created a stronghold for Nokia and Microsoft to work in safely here?
Yes, well, I should preface my remarks by saying I'm not a legal expert or a patent expert.
David is.
So I'm going to say it's quite difficult to comment on this in a very broad sense because there's a lot of intricacies involved in patent, and I would agree with a lot of people that the patent system with regard to software in particular has problems. However, I'm very much in favour of patents, and I don't necessarily think it has gone too far. I do think you can pick out individual examples where it gets a bit ridiculous. But on the other hand, as in sort of most legal cases, you actually have to defend them in every case. You can't pick and choose which are the most sensible ones, otherwise you lose the right to them altogether. And it does result in some fairly ridiculous cases, as we've seen recently. And there has been a notable upswing in patent stuff recently, but that's largely because it's becoming so much more competitive, and because a lot of the issues are around things that are relatively similar. You know, the differentiation factors have become more patentable, I suppose, and I think it's also a reflection of some real giants getting involved, and I fully expect to see more of this. Talking about the particular Nokia bit here, I mean, to be fair to Nokia, I'm sure they kind of signed off on this in one sense, but this was a deal that Mossad made with Core Wireless Licensing. As I recall correctly, some of the patent stuff had gone back before then, in terms of when Nokia kind of, they didn't dispose of these, they sort of, I believe there's some kind of licensing going on here in the first place. And it's only a tiny fraction of the patents that Nokia holds altogether. And one of the things that we have seen in the past is Nokia's been relatively a good citizen in the patent market. It hasn't been too much of one to sue everybody left, right and centre. You know, the Big Apple case is a good example of where it decided to take action. But the reading behind the scenes, a lot of that seems to be because Apple wouldn't come to an agreement. And in general, in mobile, patents had been around the principle of FRAND, which is free, reasonable and non-discriminatory. And there had kind of been gentlemen's agreement that had all gone on in the background to sort out most of its situation. And that was largely because cross-licensing could take place. In other words, Nokia could cross-license with Ericsson and Motorola. And relatively speaking, and this is very general sense, those patents reflected their market positions. And so everyone was happy because, relatively speaking, there didn't need to be that much net transfer capital. However, with Google and Apple disrupting the market and coming in as big players, suddenly we've got a situation where those who have significant patent portfolios have a smaller presence than those who actually have very little in the way of patent portfolio, and obviously that's Google or Apple, which I think really explains where most of the current litigation has come from, that suddenly you're in a place where Google and Apple, to a certain extent, are taking advantage of the fact that, you know, the innovation has already been done but not paying for it. Now, that's a pretty controversial thing to say, but I think that's really the explanation for why we're having so many disputes now. Now, whether you regard that as fair or not is really a different debate. On a personal level, I actually think that Apple and Google have taken advantage of this, and they would be the first ones to scream if other companies took advantage of their intellectual property elsewhere. And we're seeing that with Apple and the Samsung one, you know, and that's around the design stuff in particular, which is obviously Apple's expertise, and they do have a lot of patents there. If you look at wireless, it's kind of the other way around. To bring it back to, you know, Nokia and Symbian in general, do I expect to see more of this? Yes, absolutely. Was Elop ahead of the curve? I don't think I'd necessarily give him that much foresight, although he did say back when he first came in that Nokia had a very strong intellectual property portfolio and he intended to take advantage of that. So I do think we can expect them to be more aggressive in the future. The Symbian platform itself has a certain amount of portfolios that's effectively now owned by Nokia, and so there's perhaps some interesting stuff there relating to the lower level guts of an operating system that could come into play in the future. And you know, the potential is we could see a lot more because of this imbalance between the various players, and bear in mind that some of the patent agreements that have, you know, had things stabilized by cross-licensing will be up for renewal in the next, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and that's going to get to a point where Nokia's going, well, actually it doesn't make sense for us to cross-license quite so much anymore, or we want to get paid more because, you know, the various players have changed. So far from going away, I rather expect this activity to increase, but hopefully there will be less trolling and more sort of actual defence of where it is legitimate, which of course, you know, patents are all really about encouraging companies to invest in research and development. You know, innovation is really promoted by the patent system. And innovation, in my book, is good for the consumer. And that's what we want to see more of. So I certainly wouldn't write off patents in general. I would be the first to defend them because ultimately they're really what's created the phones we know today.
Rafe, what you were just saying about patents being good and people need to defend what they've created, I agree with. However, when you get into a situation, as you've just described that Nokia did, that they've passed on some of their intellectual property to one company who has then passed it on to another company who could do heaven knows what in terms of litigation and trolling. Is it perhaps irresponsible for companies to sell on the rights to the things that they've created?
Not really. It's just the way the market works. Patents, like anything else, are an asset and people will pay what they think they're worth, which is why we've seen the Nortel patent auctions and all the others go for so much money and why we talk about WebOS being valuable because it's patents, the Google Motorola thing. So if you're going to condemn one of them, you have to condemn all of those purchases. And I just really see it as another business asset. Now, another way of putting it, is it strategically sound to do that? Perhaps not, because it creates a certain perception image and that's something to be thought about. But again, that's really just going back to what's it actually costing you. I don't like patent trolls any more than anybody else, but I recognise at the same time it's actually a way of efficiently extracting value from those patents. And ultimately that's what business will often come down to. Sadly, it's about making money, not always what's, you know, seems to be the best thing or the right thing to do.
So there we go there. There's a huge amount of discussion that we can have on this one. There's lots of lovely quirks as well. Just as a quick heads up, if anybody is really wanting to follow all this stuff, can I thoroughly recommend Florian Muller's blog, which is fosspatents.blogspot.com. Huge amounts of depth every day in all of these cases and more. And definitely worth reading if nothing else than his Andy Rubin news over the weekend. Because they're now saying, hey, maybe he developed Android when he was working for Apple. That's another can of worms for another entire podcast. Right then, let's get up and look around the world, and let's get up and look around the world with our Nokia phones and a smooth link as I hand over to Steve to tell us about 3D World Gaze.
Indeed. This is what started out as a Beta Labs project. It's still technically in beta, but it's quite a bit more mature now. And when these smartphones came along, like the N8, with no camera, you know, protective shutter, things like the 5800, N97 Mini, of course, also had no protective shutter. I for one, was complaining, you know, quite rightly, saying, well, you're going to get dust and grease and scratches on your camera glass. But this Nokia said, oh, no, we're going to have lots of augmented reality applications in the future, and they will require access to the camera hardware to see straight out without the user having to fiddle around opening and closing shutters. And we can kind of see that happening. Now, I still reckon a protected camera glass is the way to go, but then that's just me, Mr. Camera Geek. Having said that, 3D World Gaze, basically you start up the application and instantly you're looking at a kind of stylized view of the countries of the world as laid out on the surface of the 3D sphere around you in real time. So as you swing around the room, as you rotate on the spot, you see the globe rotating beneath you as if transparent. So you're looking through, for example, down in one direction towards South America, in another direction down to Australia. And the best bit of all is that you can overlay points of interest. So that Nokia's partnered here with some of these free data sources. There's Panoramio, which is photos around the world. All of this is geotagged. Wikinews, which is news items, as it sounds. Geonames, which is cities and information about cities and places. And there's also Wikipedia as well, Wikipedia articles and items, all of which, again, are geotagged. So you can flick out these filters on and off, and you can basically look in any direction, see whichever items from these filters match. It's still in beta, as I say. It's very slick. It works very smoothly. There are no lags or slowdowns. I'm actually very impressed by it as an application. There are some slight gotchas. The search function is not very good. It highlights matches as dots on the map, but doesn't actually let you tap on the dots to find out what any of the matches are. But you can swipe the interface around. There are panels which slide in from the left and right. Very, very promising start. I, for one, want to see this 3D World Gaze mature and, as they say, graduate from Nokia Beta Labs. I'd like to see this in the firmware of every Nokia phone going forwards. I think it'd be a real unique application, which isn't quite matched on any of the other mobile platforms. So, yeah, big, big thumbs up from me. And, of course, it's free, so go grab it.
And just if anybody is watching Torchwood and you're standing in Buenos Aires, could you just look straight down? Because I don't think Shanghai is directly underneath you. But that just might be me and bad plot-plotting 21st century science fiction. Right then, there's, you know, Betalabs has got some great stuff coming out. I mean, there's just been a very subtle update to Nokia Maps, Nokia Maps 3.08, which seems to be all about working out a new modular installer and everything. And yeah, obviously, if you're using any of this stuff, make sure you're backing up things, which you should be doing anyway. Don't just trust your handset. You know, they've been pretty rock solid for the last couple of years. There can still be problems, and they eventually make it up. And some of them spin out. Sports Tracker is still one of the best things I've ever seen out of Betalabs. And it graduated and then moved up and left home and sprung out as well as everything. There's been a whole bundle of stuff that's growing up, and Rafe, that installer that we're talking about for Nokia Maps, it's actually more than just, oh, we've changed some of the code to make it pretty, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just worth mentioning this briefly. We've seen this on Betalabs, and I think we're going to see more of this specifically with things like OviStore as well. And it's, as you said, it's kind of a modular installer. As far as I know, it's kind of an advancement of the smart install that we've talked about in the past. Now, in this podcast and on the site, we've talked about various problems people have had installing Qt-based applications. And a lot of that is involved in the dependencies that come with that. In other words, application needs a library using Qt, and it has to download that install, and things can go wrong and it can get confused, upset your phone and stop working. And the only way to get around it is to reinstall the Qt modules, which isn't difficult. You know, it's 4 or 5 sys files to install. But as far as I know, these new modular installs, which the first one I've seen is actually an OviMaps, but as I say, I think it's coming in elsewhere, will do a little bit more checking and will download and install the dependencies if you need to. So it should mean that we get less problems when you install applications like OviMaps and less problems if you install OviStore. And more to the point, you can actually restore an OviStore installation without having to go through the torturous process of 5 or 6 sys files. You should just be able to download the one sys file. It will then check for the dependencies and reinstall them if necessary. So that should improve some of the problems people have been having with that. But yes, I agree with you in general on Betalabs. There's also been an update to Sleeping Screen, which is one of my favourite applications. Take advantage of the AMOLED hardware on the screen, and now instead of having sort of a series of pictures that were predefined, you can actually use your own pictures on the Sleeping Screen. So again, that's one I'd recommend if people want to have a very useful way of having sort of stuff, information available on the standby screen.
So there we go. Actually, it's been a busy week for software, I have to say, which is good. Hardware is obviously going to be coming on later on at the start of Q4. And if you can't remember why, oh, come on, keep up. But let's have a look around at some of our favorite bits of software. We kind of roughly touched on that one. But David, we'll hark back to next week. We'll hark back to next week. That's impressive. We'll hark back to last week when we talked about syncing, and you are championing Nueva Sync, and they've actually done a little tweaky update here, haven't they?
They have. It's currently in their Betalabs, which means it's only available to subscribers, but they are working hard to get it mainstream and available to trial accounts too, and once they do, I'll be publishing a story all about Symbian. What they have done is they've improved their support for multiple Google calendars. They already do support multiple calendars. It's kind of like a many-to-one sort of sync that you can dump all of your Google calendars into just your one Mail for Exchange calendar on your Symbian device, but if you added an event, it would just default to your personal calendar. What they're now introducing is they are misappropriating the location field in the Symbian event, Symbian calendar events, location field. And if you just put an at symbol followed by either the name or just the first letter of the calendar, Nueva Sync will read that, interpret it, and map that event to the appropriate calendar. And it doesn't mess around with anything else that's in the location field, because it works on comma separated values. So it's just that tag will get filtered out and your event location will be kept intact on Google. So that'll be coming out very soon. And also, something that they've had for a while is support for Google Tasks, which is, I'm actually finding very useful at the moment. Just had a few bugs with it, which I'm letting them know about. So yes, Nueva Sync just continues to get better and better, and is really what keeps me using Nokia and sort of Symbian and Google together without pain.
So there we go. Let's see. Steve, you had a flag up on one of your favorite apps that's been popped up this week, and there's a change to the pricing structure, I understand.
Well, Vlingo has been included in the ROMs, the firmware of many Symbian smartphones over the last year or two. The idea being, from Vlingo's point of view, that they include the basics, which I think might have been just voice recognition on sending text messages. And then if you wanted extra stuff, like updating your Facebook status or entering calendar information, that sort of thing, then you paid extra for Vlingo Premium. Well, at some point in the last month, it's not clear when, that the Vlingo Premium went free for Symbian users, and it's been advertised now in the Obby store. And I've put a news item up about it, which you can link to in the show notes. So if I do a demo live on air, for example, I can tap to speak, and let's try this. This is obviously not going to work. Text Ewan, subject, this is a great podcast, isn't it? Now let's just see what it makes of that.
Yeah, I'll just take my phone off silent here as well. We'll see if it comes through.
I may not actually click send if it's the right mess, but it says thinking, dot, dot, dot. This could take a while. Basically, it goes off to the Vlingo servers on the internet, interprets the WAV file, and then comes back with the recognition, which is the subject. This is a great podcast, and it is Just See Women's. Okay. let's try another one. In the interest of experimentation, let's try that again.
Kids, if you've ever wondered what tomorrow's world was like with Judith Han and the one that wasn't Peter Duncan of Blue Peter but looked like him anyway, it was a bit like this.
Okay, we're going to try that. We'll try that one more time. This is a live demo, so here we go. Right. Text Ewan, message. What a great podcast. Nothing about women whatsoever.
Doesn't make us sound sexy at all.
It's now going off to think. Dot, dot, dot is going off to the Vlingo servers. They're grinding their gears into action. Here we are.
Just press send and I'll read it out.
It didn't recognize your name, unfortunately. Y-U-A-N. Okay. It said, what a great podcast, nothing about women whatsoever. It basically got all of that English, is spoken fairly fluently, absolutely perfectly. So now all of
that
these...
It feels dead if it doesn't recognize Ewan, though, doesn't it?
Well, it could be that Ewan's a particularly Scottish affectation. Anyway, but it's not bad at voice recognition as long as you keep the sentences reasonably short. A bit like the Google voice recognition, you sometimes have to do it in short bits and short groupings of words. If you give it too long a paragraph, it just basically takes forever and then it gets it all wrong. But certainly worth trying at the price of free. And why not have it on everybody's phone?
Rafe, just for the record, can I point out that was Steve slagging off the entirety of Scotland? It's not just me that does nasty things on the podcast. Yep.
Yep, absolutely.
And if you out there are the person in China or India who did have to translate that twice in a row, I apologize. Right then. Applications need foundations. Foundations need two letters picked at random out of a Scrabble tile bag. And I have TQ. Rafe, what do you make of that?
Well, I think you're probably talking about Q. It's not QT, it's Q.
That's the letter you use. Oh.
And it's just a reference to the latest Qt SDK updates. Really, this is of interest to developers. The new version of the SDK includes the multiple updates, including Qt Creator 2.3, which introduces some improvements in terms of things like highlighting syntax and better profiling. Which actually supports profiling of QML applications, so that allows improvements for performance. There's also remote devices, etc., etc. You can look through the change logs, but improvements really in the kind of analytics tool, some of the debugging stuff, and better support for Qt Quick and QML. Also of interest here is that it includes Qt 4.7.4. Now, if you followed the Symbian Bell stories carefully, you'll know that's the version of Qt that is going to ship with those devices. It's not quite final yet. It's nearly there. It's also going to be on the N9, that's Hartmaten. So you'll have the same version on both those, Symbian Bell and Hartmaten. That's the N9 device. That, again, introduces some more improvements, better stability, better performance. I think perhaps one of the most notable one for developers is that it gives a opt-in split view editor, which you can enable in QML. And that means you can sort of use the split screen keyboard and the split screen text entry very easily within the Qt applications. Otherwise, it can be a little bit fiddly, as was mentioned in a recent blog post by Talv, who's the author of SimNote and another application, which I'm sure David's going to remind me of.
Talv Bensal has done SimNote, SimPaper, and SimFTP, and he put together a lot of research about writing applications with split-screen keyboards, because it isn't actually that well documented, surprisingly. I did a link of interest about it on the site, so if you go to allaboutsymbian.com and just search for writing split-screen, you'll find my story and a link to his blog post.
Thank you, David. Yes, so improvements there, and it's just really a reflection that this is continuing to be updated by the trolls that are in various places around the world, including Oslo, of course. So if you're a developer, you'll be able to get this through the automatic update process that's built into the Qt SDK, but you can kick that off manually should you wish to get up to date right away.
Right then, so there we go. Lots going on. We're almost out of time, but just time to do one and finally question, and it's this. Chance Arrington, one of the Nokia USA guys, put up, I think it was just a jokey poll up on Poll Daddy. What should Nokia call their series of Windows Phone in the US? Obviously, this isn't official, and the marketing department will probably have a fit if they've actually chosen the real name. But in the way that Samsung has Galaxy, and Apple has iPhone, and HTC Android has Droid, he's wondering what the public thought Nokia should have had. So, everybody, I'm going to ask you what your thoughts were. The top four answers that came out of the poll have been Phoenix, Genesis, Metro, and Fusion. So you're not allowed any of them. Personally, I think Stiletto would be a wonderful name. Named, of course, after the X-Plane that came after the X1 and the X2, the X3 Douglas Stiletto, which was designed to do Mach 2 for 2.5 hours to investigate high-speed flight. And in the end, it barely managed Mach 0.9 for 30 minutes. But it was a wonderful first stepping stone to some of the Century series of aircraft, which led to America doing quite well in the Korean War and beyond. So my recommendation would be the Nokia Stiletto. So, guys, what should Nokia name the Windows Phone? And you can put your tongue slightly in your cheek here if you wish. Rafe.
Well, I'd call it the Nokia Woof, because A, I like dogs. And B, it starts with a W, so it's got the Windows connection. But most importantly, woof is the sound that flames make as you're jumping off a burning platform as something ignites.
And if ever you have a problem with your old phone, you just soak it in petrol, give it a match. There you go. What's that? It's a Nokia.
Exactly. And
yeah.
It's man's best friend, obviously.
Ah, there we go. David, improve on that.
The Nokia Cuckoo. It's cuckoo in the nest that's tossing out these poor little Symbian eggs.
Okay, right, that I think I can see where David's loyalties lies. Let's take Steve's final one then.
I think we should be called the Nokia N92-15613B. I'm going to stay with the same theme as Rafe. I think tying in with the burning platform and also emphasizing sort of the way Nokia phones can produce wonderful multimedia and sound and really excel functionality-wise in terms of hardware, the Nokia Blast, which I think would do quite a memorable and short name.
So there we are. A copy of The Village of the Damned going to David for that one. Steve can take away the first prize of a stick of dynamite, which you can hand to whichever Nokia VP you stumble into at Nokia World coming on. And Rafe pays the bill, so obviously he gets to stay alive. I'm Ewan Spence. We now have our Secret Service agent codenames if you ever become President of the United States of America. So it's goodbye from Blast.
Goodbye from me, and one last demo of Lingo. I forgot to mention earlier, you can also do notes and voice styling and web searching. Well, I'm going to do one last demo while the others say goodbye, and here's my goodbye. Here we go. I'm going to say, email Ewan. This has been great. See you next week. And we'll see what Lingo makes of that while the other guys say goodbye.
Indeed, so it's a goodbye from Woof.
Roo.
It's a goodbye from Stiletto. Thank you very much. Hey, Baroni, this is Danger Mouse. Hey, now we say goodbye from Coco as well.
Goodbye, everybody. And if you would like to support my nomination for Lord Mayor of Hold, get in touch.
I'm afraid Lingo completely failed to get you in again. It had a message. You on this is big great. See you next week. Well, it got the see you next week, right? So I guess we will.